Welcome to the Innovation Podcast Series, hosted by me, Martin Lucas, with our subject matter expert and innovation catalyst, Andrew Vorster. Andrew delivers keynote talks all around the world, has worked for FTSE companies, and we will be mining the gold nuggets from his brain. Hey, this is Martin Lucas. I'm joined by Andrew Vorster, the innovation catalyst. How are we doing today, Andrew?
I'm all good, Martin. And you?
I am very, very good. I'm good today. I'm good tomorrow. But that might just be me envisioning the future too much. You see that really weak link into talking about the future? That's where we're going to start, right? This episode is called How Do You Envisage the Future? So let's start with that as a question. How do you? How do you envisage the future? How do you know what's coming?
Well, you could always hire a futurist, couldn't you?
Indeed.
Exactly what's coming, wouldn't you? I've got this sort of adverse reaction to the term futurist at the moment, even though I myself am considered by quite a lot of people as being a futurist. And it is true, I've actually done a course run by the Houston University of Foresight, which is a formal course that teaches you how to become a futurist. But unfortunately, marketing in recent years has really sullied this concept of what a futurist is. Okay. And they've sort of given people the impression that a futurist is somebody who sits there with their crystal ball and they predict the future. They predict what's going to be. And they say, well, this senior futurist has predicted that we're all going to be riding around in flying cars, and yet here we are, and we're not riding around in flying cars, and what's going on? If you want crystal balls and future prediction, feel free to go along to a fun fair or a fortune teller or find a caravan where there's somebody that offers that kind of thing. That's not what a futurist does. For the first thing, a futurist, any futurist worth their salt, will tell you there is no such thing as the future. I'll let that sink in a little bit because the emphasis was put there on purpose. There is no such thing as the singular future. There are multiple possible extrapolations and paths that the future could take from this point forward. And a real, true, classically trained futurist is tasked with envisaging multiple paths so that they can help their client build the one that they prefer. Or sometimes it's not just the one that they prefer, because they might want to hedge their bets and build against multiple of the possible and plausible futures that might come out. So futurists are trained to apply, their core tool is systems thinking. It's all about cause and effect. This is where we are today. How did we get here? Where could we go tomorrow? What if? What if this happened? What if that happened? What would the multiple different diversions be? What about these external impacts? Futurists think of everything in systems, and they think of the way that systems will interact on each other. So I believe that the way to envisage the future is to apply the methodologies and the tools of a futurist to help you think about it.
Okay. Does that mean that we all need to become a futurist or need to hire futurists in order to survive?
Well, you can apply a futurist thinking. That's the key thing, is that you don't have to become a futurist and sell yourself as a futurist, but you need to understand the way that they work. And I mentioned systems thinking earlier on, and a lot of people think, oh, that sounds awfully complicated. That sounds like trigonometry or higher maths or something like that. Systems thinking, oh, I've got enough things to think about. Well, there's a very simple way to reach the same endpoint. And it's one that everybody knows. Every adult will know how to apply this methodology. They've just never ever thought of that way. And the tool and the methodology is storytelling. Now, before you're not one of those touchy-feely things now, we're going to tell stories, and stories are incredibly powerful. If you just think of, here's a thought for you. Every book you have ever read, or every book that's ever been written in English, is the same 26 letters arranged in a different way. It's all that it is. That's a bit of innovation, isn't it? Just ponder that a little bit more. So stories are simply the collection of letters put in a different way every time to tell a new story. And it's the same thing with innovation. What you've got to think about is, what's the story of the future of my company at the moment? How's it going to turn out? Now, most people will think about the future as a fairy tale story. You know, it's happily ever after. Well, we're the biggest company in our sector at the moment, and our sales have been progressing 10% year on year for the last 6 years. And this year we're going to achieve a 12% sale. So that means that our graph is going up, and we're going to be around. We're doing these things. We've got this great product roadmap. This is the way. We're here forever. Don't you worry. Sign up for the retirement plan. Great place to work. We're going to be around forever. 6 months later, they suddenly discover they've been disrupted. And everybody's standing around there going, well, you know, was it Mark Tyson that said everybody has a plan until you punched in the face? And that's what happens to companies. So I personally run lots of workshops on storytelling. And you can go and Google this methodology if you want to. I won't give you the whole methodology now. And I've got my own take on it. And it's known as the Pixar pitch. Pixar Movies, Pixar Animation Studio, is the most successful animation studio of all time. And their chief storyteller, Emma Coates, wrote a book a couple of years ago, and it was all about Pixar and the way that they make movies, the way they conceptualize and come up with ideas for their movies. And in it was a core thing that was the Pixar pitch, the way it was, six core prompts. And those six prompts are used to generate every single Pixar storyline to date. Finding Nemo, The Brave, Toy Story, Cars. Every single Pixar movie follows those exact same six prompts. And I won't go through them. You can Google it. But the idea is that when you follow those prompts, you come up with a story. And actually, I will go through it. Basically, their prompts are, once upon a time, or in the beginning. So what's the state as it is now, right? Mm-hmm. Every day. So every day something goes on. What we would call business as usual in business, okay? One day there is change. Either something changes externally, something is done to you, or one day you do something differently. It's a behavioral change. So if you think of that in a business context, one day, you're going to release a new product. There's going to be a new thing to market. And because of that, there are implications. Other things change. Because when you change something, change doesn't ever happen in isolation. There are consequences and implications to your change. So new things start happening. New customer behaviors, new market entrance, new something, right? Then there's another. And because of that, because the implications will result in you having to do something differently. So it's, and because of that, and because of that, right? The do something differently could be, you might need to forge new partnerships. You might need to find new suppliers. You might need to change old relationships. You might just simply have to stop doing a whole lot of things that you were doing and start doing a whole lot of other ones. Until finally is, and what's the end result? Now, when you Google the Pixar pitch, you'll be able to see they take you through the story of Finding Nemo, and you'll see how it fits in there. But if we put that in a business context, you know, in the beginning, every business is started up with a really good a purpose in mind. You know, there's normally a founding story where the founder saw a problem and they started this. And then every day the business gets so involved in customer complaints or servicing customers and generating more sales and everything like that, that they actually lose sight of the original goal. And one day, a brand new entrant comes into the market and steals 30% of their revenue. And because of that, all the senior executives lose their bonuses and a whole lot of them resign. And because of that, there's a whole lot of redundancies and the company starts a downward spiral until finally they get sold for a pound. Okay, that unfortunately is all too commonly the business story of today. But now you've got to think about, how does that story evolve? So I said at the beginning, everybody starts with their fairy tale story. This is the way that life has always been, therefore this is the way that life always has been. We've got this tendency to project in a straight line. It always has been thus, thus it shall always be. You know, straight line graphs. We like that in business. But now if you think of different storylines, I said every book you'd ever read was different combination of the same 26 letters. So what would a nightmare storyline look like? What is your worst nightmare come true? We run out of this raw material. The exchange rate changes. There is war. There is a new startup that comes and takes, you know, half of our people because they're selling the same product as us at 20% lower or 50% lower or something like that. What's your worst nightmare that can happen? Or what does a sci-fi story look like? You know, if you could take some of the technology or some of the futures that you see portrayed in Hollywood movies, if that was real, what would that future for your company look like? If the sci-fi future existed, if you were writing the next Hollywood blockbuster about your company, your team, your organization, and it was sci-fi based, what would all the people be doing? What wouldn't they be doing? How would they be behaving? What would a romance story of your organization look like? Romance story, you get together with somebody else, what do your kids look like? If you partnered with another organization, what new products and services could you bring to market that you couldn't individually? What would your kids look like? What would your combined collaborative product offering be to the market? What would a fantasy story look like? If you could wave a magic wand and take away all the problems today, what would you be doing differently? And if you think of all of these different things, suddenly you go, oh my goodness, I don't need to be creative and working for Pixar Studios in order to come up with the future. I can actually do this myself because I've read action stories, adventure stories, horror stories. I've seen movies. And you start taking the inspiration from there. And you think about your own business, organization, team, maybe even your own personal life. And you think about it in that way. And then you start generating all of these multiple different futures. That's simply how futurists works. That's essentially what systems thinking is, but boiled down to something that's really understandable and accessible to everybody right now.
I think that's really phenomenal. I mean, the structure that you've just given that and the way of explaining it is why you are so well known for what you do, because that makes a huge difference. So I get the narrative component of it and the all these different ways to look at different alternates of what could your future could be. But why is that important? Why does it matter? Why not just pick one?
So the importance of coming up with the multiple different ones is it gives you the opportunity to try and start drawing themes about what ifs, and it will highlight potential areas, opportunities that you might not have thought of. It might also highlight early threats that you hadn't previously considered to be a threat. So I'll give an example. I ran a series of workshops with a well-known bathroom fitting supplier on the future of technology and showering. Okay. It's got to be one of my most fun series of workshops I've ever run, I can tell you. And there were no naked people in showers involved, just before anybody started. It's a fascinating topic because who would have known that the future of technology and showering is even a thing? But I can't divulge too much because I'm under NDA with them. But one of the scenarios, one of the stories that came out of a nightmare story was, okay, look, our company makes the most fantastic showering experiences in the world. But what if there was no water? What if water was in such short supply that nobody could shower anymore? What would we sell? What if we got to sell? That's our nightmare scenario. Not if somebody else disrupts us, but if our thing that makes our product valid, if that gets taken away. And you'd go, well, that's an impossibility, and you know, no water, that doesn't happen. Hang on a minute. Let me give you a couple of scenarios where there is no water or where it's in really short supply. Space stations, right? Space stations and space trips. Water is in really, 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 really short supply. It's very limited. It's got to be recycled the whole way through. How do you have a great showering experience when you're going to limit water like that? Submarines, another one, a little bit easier for them. They can desalinate. Here's a very real world one. Cape Town, very recently, one of the first major, relatively first world cities in the world, to run completely dry of water. Those people couldn't shower, literally. It was a government thing. You're not allowed to shower every day because you'd use too much water. Now, this bathroom fitting supplier, because this concept had come up during the workshop, they actually put some more thought about it. And they went, hang on a minute. What about if we repurposed our industrial recycling shower tray that takes contaminants out of the water before it ends up in the waste system, and we repurpose that into a domestic showering tray? As a matter of fact, their biggest market is hotels. What if they came up with something where they could turn around to hotels in South Africa, in Cape Town, and say, we can let your customers shower almost indefinitely on 2 liters of water that's continuously recycled, HEPA-grade filters, take out all the microbes. We'll put clean water back in your head. We'll even filter out urine if you're that way inclined. And we'll suddenly, everybody in the room turned around and said, my goodness, we've actually got the stuff. We don't even have to invent anything. We just have to repurpose something that we've already got and put it into a commercial environment, sorry, into a public environment instead of into an industrial environment. And suddenly they had a new product there that they could then start rethinking, but what about the space program? What about some? What about people that are living in desert areas? Suddenly now they had a new product offering there that even though they'd been sitting on their product for a specific area, they'd never ever thought. And a lot of them had never ever thought of the concept of what happens if there is no water. So it's important to explore these things because it expands your mind. That's the most important thing. And then you can start plotting the opportunities and the threats that come out of that.
It's very powerful. I mean, it's not just exciting for the company that you mentioned, but for any company doing this kind of thing. I would imagine that it's very empowering and kind of liberates you when you start thinking freshly and thinking differently about things. What's coming next? What's the next episode going to be about?
Well, the next episode is we've been having lots of fun at the moment, and I always say innovation is a blend of art and science, and we've been talking a lot about the creative and the inspiration side, but we haven't spoken about the actual process. So we're going to be tackling some of the processes. Is there a process of innovation? Is innovation a process that you can just crank the handle on and churn out things at the end? So it's going to be covering a couple of innovation myths and innovation processes and a chat about that.
Wonderful. Thank you, Andrew. You can follow the entire series by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or visit andrewvorster.com. That's andrewvorster.com.